Questions, yes.
You had mentioned when you go back to the scene of the crime to not talk about your recovery.
Yes.
Well, I'm actually going back to the scene of the crime next week. And you're going to notice that I'm different. And they're going to be curious.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not supposed to talk about my recovery. How in the hell do I answer them?
A really good answer is to say, you know, I've been doing some personal work. And they say, what kind of personal work, right? You say, it's personal. unless they're like in your face, gotta know, you know, I'm eating you up. It's like, it's personal. It's personal work. Usually for family, you know, members of the family, that means, okay, that's enough. That's all I want to know. Please don't tell me more. But, you know, you can also say, well, thank you for noticing. I've really been working hard on my personal work. And that's it. You know, if they keep asking, you say, well, you know, it is personal. It's personal work I'm doing. You know, it's like, what are they going to do? Well, you have to tell me. Well, if that's true, then I'm getting on the train going back home. Yes.
Can I have one of those pink sheets?
Pink sheets. Yes. Don't leave without a pink sheet. Here, I'll put mine up here.
Thank you so much.
Any other questions? Yes. Maybe could you put those over there?
Where I'm at is sort of, you know, what's coming to mind is, you know, we know the Big Bang, where how did the universe get started? But somebody's like, where does the codependency begin? What is the spark that sets it off? Because I'm studying social work and they talk about interdependent cultures versus independent cultures, and I'm saying, well, there it is. Mm-hmm. If you push a child to be too independent, or you teach them they can't be independent, they must interdependent and do for others.
Mm-hmm.
Rising in codependency from the day they're born, like regardless of which way you go. So I'm thinking, you know, if I want to start a relationship with someone, how do I, from the very beginning, keep from just perpetuating the same pattern?
Right.
I have kids, for instance,
it is a legacy. Codependence is one of those, huh? Okay, the essence of the question was basically, how can you stop the legacy of codependence? Okay, and where does it come, how does it come up? So it comes up when you notice that people are not acting their age, that children always act their age, and, you know, if you are a child growing up in a family where you don't feel safe, where you're being abandoned, abused, or neglected, you are going to have codependence. And one of the things that happens is that sometimes we think that people who are needless and wantless are actually functional adults. We reward that a lot in our culture. We give them raises. We vote them into office. We, you know, it's like, I'm needless and wantless and I can do everything. Well, that's not what a functional adult is. Functional adults are self-caring. They do good self-care. They realize self-care is job one. They have people in their lives that are their friends, that there's a give and take. They act in moderation. They have boundaries. Okay, these are things that functional, and most people would not disagree. All right? But when, you know, it's like you can make a child, you can, you know, children are pretty much like, they believe everything that adults tell them. And so if they're told that, you know, you're precious and wonderful and you can, you know, if you try and do something, you know, it's like, don't worry about getting it perfect and I'm here to help you and I'm here to answer questions and if I can't do it, I'll help, you know, this kind of thing. Helps a person to integrate themselves into the larger society. If they feel cared for and loved as children, they feel more equipped to move forward to have peer relationships. They don't feel, if they didn't get their childhood needs and wants met around emotional intimacy and safety, they don't feel safe to go out there and mix it up with their peers. And if any of you remember what it was like trying to work out friendships, you know, in elementary school, in junior high, in high school, that isn't easy. But if you have a fallback, a safety net, where no matter where you go, people recognize that you're a precious person and that you are somebody who can be, you know, that you can be counted on. I'll give you an example. Kids will always, at their age, right? So when you're an adolescent, it's hard. And I'm going to give you an example of my own son, right? When I was challenged with that, he's 16. By this time, he's way bigger than me. And he's real smart, and he hasn't had to work through wondering if he's smart or not. So he's just real smart, and he's getting smarter, and he's putting it together, and I'm real happy. And then he announces to me one day, well, my friends and I are going to the Gorge this weekend. No. No. Well, yeah, we're going to the Gorge. No. What do you mean, no? My friends are going. No. I am going to the Gorge, and you can't stop me. And I said, James, no. You can't go to the Gorge with your friends. You're 16. There are no adults there. There's all kind of drug addicts there. There are people that are doing things that you haven't even thought of yet. And, yeah, you're just too young to do that. And you need an adult there, and I'm not going to the Gorge. No, not happening. I hate you! I hate you! You never let me do anything! And he's like, right here, right? And he's looking down at me, because I'm a lot shorter than him. I hate you! I hate you! You never let me do anything! You're always controlling me! You say that you trust me! I haven't done anything not to get your trust! And here you are, and they do go to the Gorge! And I'm standing there, I'm thinking, I'd like to smack you right now. But I didn't! First thought wrong. Right? I'm an adult. I'm a person. I don't like it, right? But he's only acting his age. Right? He's acting his age. And my job is to do what? Act my age. So I stand there. And he goes on for God. It seemed like 3 years, but it wasn't. And finally he's exhausted himself, right? And he's like, and I said, James, I know being 16 is a bitch. I said, you're right between being a kid and being a grown up, but you're still a kid. So I can't let you do it. You can't do it. I won't let you. And I know it's really hard. I was 16. I know it's hard. And so, yeah, but you weren't. So I wait some more. First thought wrong. Because I really want to, like, do you know what? I could go into the things that happened to me, but that's first thought wrong. So then he's done, finally. And I said, look, I'll tell you what. Talk to your friends and the ones that their parents won't let them go to the Gorge. You guys come up with some idea about what you want to do here. You know what's acceptable and what isn't. So you guys come up with an idea about what you can do here, and I'll do my level best to help you make it happen. Okay. He goes off. And I'm like, because that's a lot of energy. But you know, the whole point was that I stayed my functional adult. You know, it's like, I'm going to argue with a really upset 16-year-old who's acting his age. As soon as I do, I'm in total boundary failure, and I ask for everything I get. Boundary failure means that I'm now going to tell you what to think. I'm going to tell you what to do. It's like, no. I mean, I told him. It's like, no, you can't go. That's all. Right? And then it's like, rah, rah, rah. So then he comes back about a half hour later. Well, I talked to so-and-so. Oh, so-and-so can't go and so-and-so can't go. So we want to stay over here for the weekend. I said, well, what do you want to do? well, we want to watch movies and we want to watch videos and maybe we want to go to the movies. And, you know, I said, okay, well, let's sit down and see how we can make this happen. And we did, you know, and I had to, like, spend the weekend with a bunch of 16-year-old boys. And that was fine because I love them and I think they're precious and wonderful and they're 16-year-old boys, right? But what they learn from that, you know, what they always learn from that is that they liked it over there. They felt safe over there. They felt safe over at our house because they knew she's going to take care of us. She's not going to let us get away with crap and we'll still have fun. You feel safe when you're a kid when you know that the grown-ups are willing to say no. And most of the time, grown-ups don't want to say no because they're afraid the kids are going to get mad at it. Well, yes. But if you're an adult, you know that your kids aren't your best friends. And they are going to get mad at you. And if they're not getting mad at you, you're not doing something right. Okay? Because if you're doing it right, that means you are going to say no to them when it's the right thing to say. Not to manipulate, not to control, not to get back at them. Okay? So when kids get this kind of love and care, when they grow up and someone says no to them, guess how they act? Okay. Maybe something else? No? Okay. Later? Okay. They're not personally offended by it. They don't automatically go to, well, they don't care about me. And that's just an example when grown-ups act their age when they're around children. And that's when the legacy changes, okay? In our family, it's all you had to do was ask and you got the crap beat out of you. That's all there was. It was just violence all the time and you never knew where it was coming from. So it was just a frightening place to be. It didn't feel safe and that's all we ever got was no. So when grown-ups are acting their age, they're making decisions based on reality. They are thinking, I'm raising this child. I want this child to grow up to be a functional, interdependent adult. That they will still want to be with people and need relationship, but they won't die if they don't get the very exact thing that they think they should have. Right? That they won't die without it. That they won't go off and, you know, become an addict because no one loves them because they know they're lovable. Right? So, you know, you ask a question, I'll just give a little short version. How did this all happen? I know it can be done. Short versions can be done. I heard you. So there was a gang of us, Ken, Mary, me, Pia, Pat. There was a gang of us back in the late 70s who got sober. And we were new. And we were really young. I mean, I was 27. And it was like from 27 to 33. We were young. And back in those days, we walked in to an AA meeting. It was like, what are you doing here? You're awful young to be here. And you're a woman. And you're, what are you doing here? Oh, I don't think it, you know, it was this kind of thing. It's like we had to prove. And so it finally got to be, you know, it finally got to be comfortable. We started doing our step work. And because we were all young and there weren't very many of us, we'd talk amongst each other. And we all got to talking about, okay, I've done my fourth step now, and I still feel like crap. I still feel sad. I still feel depressed. And I used to say to myself, I used to say out loud, you know, to other people. I'd say, well, you know, I just have... I was born with depression. I've had it all my life. It's just that my constant companion, and I just accept it. I can't take medication because they never worked. I wonder why. So I guess that's just how it is. But it was interesting. We all felt the same way. It was like, yeah, well, I guess we all, maybe we're all, well, we're self-medicating. That's what we're doing, right? So that was okay for a while. But you see, I already had my master's, my MSW, already before I even got sober. And so I did have some training. And Pia was already a nurse. And so she did have some training. And Ken was already, you know, in college to become a counselor. So he had a little bit of training. We all, like, talked a lot amongst ourselves saying, you know, one of the things that we all know about each other, because we talk amongst ourselves a lot, is that we all had terrible families. We were all abandoned. We were all abused. We were neglected. It was a nightmare. And it was kind of like this, it wasn't a moment, but it was really fast. And it was also at a time where Claudia Black was starting Adult Children of Alcoholics. Lori Dwinnell was doing the work that she did around Adult Children of Alcoholics. You know, Janet Wojtyk was also writing a book about, you know, being an adult child. We said, we're not adult children of alcoholics, necessarily. But, boy, not being sober and working like dogs, we still feel pretty bad. We have to work really hard at just, you know, keeping our head above water. And kind of that's how it happened. We all said, well, we know we have this history. We're all kind of alike in that way. And me, I was trained. I was Freudian trained back then. That's what they did, right? We had Freud, we had Rogers, the humanists, and said, well, maybe it's because we were all abused. Really? You think that might be? Oh, well, it can't be an excuse now. No, we aren't going to drink. We're not going to use drugs. We're not going to do those things. But we think there's something else. So we all talked about it, and then we decided to start CODA. That's how it happened. So I hope that it was a moment. And I would tell you this. It's been years since I had depression. Years. And it was a result of doing this work. It's like, I don't have depression. What do you know about that? Yes.
Mm-hmm. This year, my Memorial Weekend was worse. I called hotlines to get help and to deal with this situation. My husband wasn't dating me, but he might as well have been slugging me in the face because I might have been kicked him out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Deflection and all this other stuff and living my life doesn't help me feel love. It helps me feel busy.
Right.
Not love.
Right. You know, that's a really good question / issue / thank you for bringing it up. One of the things I tell people, I try to remember to tell people, especially when they come in to do their work with me or they do legacy or I send them down to do survivors or something, I say, one of the things you have to understand is that once you start doing this work to get yourself emotionally grown up, whatever relationship you're in will start rocking and rolling in ways that you didn't ever imagine. And the reason for that is that when you're in a relationship that's that dysfunctional, you start getting better. They want you, they need you to be in that position just to keep it the way it was. We resist change as a, you know, human beings. We do. We're afraid of it. And so people that aren't in recovery will really react to that. All right? Absolutely. Yes. Yes. And so what I would say is this. You have to ask yourself this question when it gets that bad. You have to say, is my sanity and my wellness worth the relationship? Because if he doesn't get in recovery, it really will get worse. Remember I said, those people, you might get better. Those people, if they're not getting in recovery, they're getting worse. So this is happening. And so that relationship won't improve just because you're getting better. That takes two to tangle, and he's not going to like it. And so what I would say is that stay in the program and do your work. And one of the focuses is that if I'm in a dangerous situation of any kind, my job is to remove myself. Because I can... Well, you know, whatever it takes, right?
Yeah.
It's like that crisis, whatever is created, will pass. And as long as you stay in recovery, work a program, get sponsors, get people around you who can be supportive of you, you get there.
Even though my situation is worse, I am way more supported.
Yes.
Because of the program.
That's right. No, you're not, no. You're not destroying it. You've changed the rules. And they don't want it to change. Until they want to change, they're not going to change. So here's another reality about recovery is that I'm talking about the gifts of recovery. What happens after you've been doing it a long time? I mean, 38 years is a pretty long time to do this, right? But what happens, one of the things that I really want you to hear is that shit still happens, right? But when you're in recovery, you get better and better at dealing with it, and it doesn't have the impact. But it takes some time. Yes. Yeah.
And you don't feel like it's getting better. I mean,
Well, when there are two adults that are trying to be in a relationship, they're not trying to figure out, like, oh, should we be together? They're working on themselves, and then when they come together, they're working on a third thing, which is the relationship. And, you know, this is all about, you know, marriage and family counseling and couples work. But basically, if this person's working on their codependency issues and becoming a more emotionally mature adult, and this person is working on their relationship, their issues, and becoming a more emotionally mature adult, then you think of this third thing is the relationship. It's a triangle, all right? And these two people are what creates this, and whatever these two people bring to that is the level of health and vitality that relationship has. And so these two people should be focusing on keeping themselves well so that when they come together in this relationship space, that what they bring to that is healthy, their healthy selves. And they're not like looking at each other to see what, you know, what you're bringing. You're looking at what you're bringing to the relationship, because whatever you put into that is what you're going to get out of it. And, you know, when people are in recovery together, it's really easy to get in each other's, like, space about, well, you know, I think that, yeah, I think you need to do more. Even thinking in your, well, I think you need to do more, but I'm not going to tell you and all this. It's, like, really important to keep that separate. Because if you don't, what happens is that you get these enmeshed relationships where, you know, it's all about us, not about me, and then what we bring to create this. It's like, this, like, enmeshed relationship is messy. And it isn't satisfying in the long run. Because one of the things that happens is that over time, there's no sexual energy. It's like when people are so close that they know every single thought, feeling, movement of the other one. It's like being with a sibling or a very best friend. When that's happening, there's no spark going on. So, you know, without that, people's relationship starts to lose that energy, and it's important. Yes. Well, she's about, on her best day, she's about 10 years old. And she even told me the last time I visited her, you know, Donna, sometimes I feel like you're more my mother. And I'm going, Interesting. In my mind, interesting. Isn't that interesting? She said, sometimes I feel like you're my sister. Isn't that interesting? Of course, I just sat there and said, well, that's nice. You know, it's like, that's her reality, right? I'm not there to challenge it. I mean, they're kids raising kids. Not good. Yes.
You said something about self-abandoning.
Oh, self-abandonment. When you're doing something that's not in your own best interest, and when you're not doing self-care.
Not doing self-care.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, usually when you are feeling that way, one of the ways to be able to determine what's going on with you so you can take care of yourself is to ask yourself how old you feel. And then when you ask yourself, how old do I feel with this right now? It might be that, you know, when you were younger, somebody that was actually, you know, like two-timing you and that you've, you know, was doing something like that, because that's what a trigger is. You know, if you don't know what you're upset about, it's usually a trigger. Because functional adults know what's going on. They're paying attention, right? And so if you're spinning around something and you don't know what it is, the first question you say is, how old do I feel right now? Because that's probably my feeling reality. And then you can explore it from there. Okay, one more, that's it.
So I've done that, and I find that when I tap, the shame turns into anger. And I don't know why. And I feel like part of that anger is to myself, but it also feels like it's the anger is coming from somewhere else. And I was wondering if you have any ideas what that could be.
That's a very good question, and I could open up a whole new can of worms, which I'm not going to do. But one of the things that happens to people when they grow up in families that are less than nurturing is that they, because, first of all, when you're a child, you don't have boundaries. You don't know your own reality. I've never heard anyone talk about a emotionally mature kid, and if they do, I'm worried about them. But it's like, and so when you're a child and you grow up in a family that's less than nurturing, that child, when you're a kid, you pick up the emotional energy that your parents don't take care of. And you carry it around and think it's yours for the rest of your life. And that's why this work is so important. That's the piece that's really hard to get to, is that, you know, and I don't know how you get to it without a skilled therapist or something, because you have to be able to see where this person's emotional reality is theirs, and this part of their emotional reality doesn't even belong to them. And so this part of that emotional reality, if it doesn't belong to you, you can work on that for the rest of your life, spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on therapy, and it's never going to resolve. Why? It didn't belong to you. It's kind of like, oh, you got that broken leg, so I'll walk around with crutches, right? You can't fix something that doesn't belong to you. And one of the core clinical issues around codependence is that people carry their parents' emotional reality that either the parent acted out or was in denial about. And you don't even know it. So what I would say about that is that when you feel some kind of emotion that you can't identify, it's like when you're a functional adult, you usually know what your emotions are about. Well, if I'm angry, I'm angry about that. If I'm afraid, I'm afraid about that. You know, it's like you usually know. When you don't know, but you feel it coming up and you can't identify it, you know, from a child, like, have I ever felt this before? And you go back and deal with it that way. I would say it doesn't belong to you. And until you are able to, like, do the work to excavate that and get the crap out of there, then one of the things you can do is to just do a little meditation, pretend that that emotional energy has little wings flying away. And you know what? If it belongs to you, it'll be back. And if it didn't, it's gone. Okay. That's all. Thank you.